Hello, I'm Brian Tobin. This is number 0567, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0567. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Jane Jenkins Herlong, who is the author of Rhinestones on My Flip-Flops. She just has a can-do attitude.
We can either be pitiful and decide that we're going to flop, or we can not flip out, but flip ourselves into a better mindset of a can-do. And that's kind of what I thought. You know what? Life is going to flip. Don't be a flop. Let's add some rhinestones. Be creative. Be innovative. So we have to make ways to make it work. But first, our mindset has to be that of, hey, look, I'm not going to flip out. I'm going to find a way to add a rhinestone to it and be creative.
Todd Cochran is the CEO of Blueberry. He's seeing an explosion in the growth of podcasting.
You have groups now that may not be being covered by mainstream media that have the ability to get their message out there. And again, I really think a lot of it has to do, we see if you're on Facebook, you're seeing a lot of content being shadow banned or banned. And I think people are starting to realize this. So they're starting to do their own shows on their own .coms. Building their own messaging, building their own communities, their tribes. It's really, really exciting at this point.
Gary Phillips is the author of Matthew Henson and the Ice Temple of Harlem, a pulp novel featuring a real-life adventurer in Matthew Henson.
In the real world, he had been kind of given short shrift because he was black, because of racism at the time, in terms of his accomplishment of helping to reach the North Pole. So thinking about that, and then thinking about using him in a different kind of context, and having been a fan of the old pulp stuff, I just eventually figured out that, well, what I want to do is take that Matthew Henson guy and kind of then put him now in 1928. It's the tail end of the Roaring Twenties, but it's also the Harlem Renaissance.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0567, was Brian Tobin. No, the other Brian Tobin. This Brian Tobin is a podcaster who is the host of the show called Tobin Tonight. Give it a listen when you get a chance. You'll also find a link to Tobin Tonight by going to the Stuff File webpage for this show, which you just heard Brian say. See how this all goes around full circle? Thank you very much, Brian, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, we all know that the United States is a somewhat litigious society, and often it's the wrong types of lawsuit that find their way of making it through the courts. Now, this story is a classic example of that. Jack Cole is in a Colorado prison for sexual assault. Before he was imprisoned, Cole squatted in a dead woman's house and used her car for months until the family could get him and various friends living with him evicted. By then, the house was destroyed. Having lots of time on his hands in prison, Cole has been filing numerous lawsuits, including against the dead woman's family. The basis for the suit, they injured his feelings, as well as damaged his reputation. Aw, his little bitty feelings were hurt. Pauvre bébé. He demanded $20,000 in attorney's fees, even though he filed the suit without an attorney, $150,000 for loss of work, even though he had no non-prison job, let alone a six-figure salaried position, $45,000 in medical expenses, even though he doesn't pay for his own medical expenses, he's in prison, and $200,000 in punitive damages, even though he's the one who committed various crimes. By filing paperwork certifying that the family was served with the lawsuit, a judge had no choice but to enter a default judgment when the family didn't reply to the suit and awarded Cole the $415,000. The suit is getting another look, however, since Cole faked the paperwork. You know, at what point do you have to ask, is the state culpable for letting criminals continue to attack their victims from prison? Maybe the family should countersue. That would make things interesting. Would you like another idiotic miscarriage of justice story? Well, here you go. A grocery store in Dieten, Switzerland, called the police when an 8-year-old boy asked if he could use this to buy things at the store. What he offered was Chinese hell money, traditionally used to send riches to the afterlife. Didn't the store employees know it was fake? Sure, but it is our policy, manager Tanya Bauman said. Didn't the police know it was fake? Sure, but once the store called, there was therefore suspicion of counterfeit money being put into circulation, a police spokesperson said. The boy and his 10-year-old brother picked up the obviously fake notes from the ground at a carnival where they were being tossed around freely. Police took mugshots of the boy and his brother and searched the house and confiscated several more pieces of the play money. They will have a police record for 12 years, even though children under 10 cannot be prosecuted for a crime in Switzerland. Wow. Apparently the Swiss don't play. And zero tolerance has no age limit for persecution. Hope these kids don't play Monopoly. Besides, their get-out-of-jail-free cards would be useless. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the exploding whale was one of the first videos to go viral on the internet thanks to a mention by humor columnist Dave Barry back in 1990. Even though the dynamiting of a dead whale, which was washed up on a Florence, Oregon beach, happened in November of 1970, millions assumed the report by KATU-TV was a current event and continued to pass it around on the internet via video. Now, fast forward to today, as the city of Florence asked for name suggestions and a public vote on the best suggestion for a new city facility. The answer was clear, and officials have dedicated Florence's new city feature, Exploding Whale Memorial Park. The unveiling was planned to occur at the city's annual Rhododendron Festival, the theme, Blast from the Past. No, seriously, that was the theme, Blast from the Past. But the coronavirus blew those plans out of the water and probably fell in chunks on nearby witnesses. Well, better than naming it after Confederate generals, I say. Although it's going to be hard to make a statue that has chunks of it in midair. By the way, I have put a video up on the Facebook Stuff File fan page and also on the Stuff File website that tells the story of the whale. It really is good viewing. Blubber everywhere. Give it a gander. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The footwear flip-flops can apparently help define us and enable us to live our best lives. So says former Miss America contestant, author, and humorist Jane Jenkins Herlong. She is the author of several books, including Rhinestones on My Flip-Flops. Jane joins us via Skype from South Carolina. Hi, Jane.
Hey there, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for
being... We've known each other for such a long time.
Thanks for being on the program with us. You know, people who listen to the show on a regular basis will be very surprised that I would talk to someone who has a book called Rhinestone on My Flip-Flops, because most people who listen to the show already know I hate flip-flops. So tell me, what is this book about?
Well, I started thinking about the changes in life, and all of a sudden we get these zingers like we did in early spring this year in our country. And I mean, we can either be pitiful and decide that we're going to flop or we can not flip out, but flip ourselves into a better mindset of a can do. And that's kind of what I thought. You know what? Life is going to flip. Don't be a flop. Let's add some rhinestones. Be creative. Be innovative. I guess you've had to do that too, Peter. We all have. Those of us who are in the broadcasting, writing industries, comedy. So we have to make ways to make it work. But first, our mindset has to be that of, hey, look, I'm not going to flip out. I'm going to find a way to add a rhinestone to it and be creative. Find new ways. See, that's what it's about.
So you're using flip-flops as a metaphor.
Yeah, because I don't like them either.
Oh, thank you.
I can't stand that thing between my toes. It drives me crazy. I have one pair. That's because the little thing between my toe is cushioned.
I don't like them because I just don't like the sound they make on floors or concrete. You hear them coming a mile away. It's like, oh.
You know what? I had a pair of shoes that made that sound at a funeral one time, and I was so shamed. I would never, everybody just stared at me because they heard me before they saw me, and I pitched them in the trash. And they weren't flip-flops. It was the shoes that were loud.
Mm. Now, speaking of funerals, I got to clear this up because in trying to get in contact with you, you said you have to go to the funeral parlor in order to be able to talk to me.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, it's because our town is so small, and my husband is a New York Life agent, and he shares his office with the funeral home lady. So I like to say New York Life or Death. When people walk in and don't know where they're going, it's really a surreal moment. And so I had to call Betty, the funeral home director, to see if I could sit in her funeral home because it's the best internet in town. You know, I'm just telling you, the drugstore ain't any good, but the funeral home is happening.
And the added advantage for radio is that it's quiet.
Yes, dead in here.
Okay, so tell us about the book, Rhinestones on My Flip-Flops. What will we learn in reading this book?
Well, you're going to laugh. I don't know if your listeners enjoy any kind of crazy Southern humor, but that's what I specialize in. So I picked out iconic biblical women like deceived Eve and domestic diva Martha and whiny Naomi, because I'm middle-aged, you know, Anthony, I mean, I'm Peter, and I don't like whiny women because I try not to be whiny. So I picked on Naomi because she just, oh, look at my life, blah, blah, blah. So I just tell funny stories, Peter, and people just really love the book. And I got a really good contract on that through Hachette Publishing Book Group, which shocked me because I made an F in writing. So that's just between us. Mm.
So as I mentioned, you have several books. How many have you written?
I've written, I've just released my fifth one. It's with my agent. It's called Sweet Tea Secrets from the Deep Fried South. It's dysfunctional. It's dysfunctional Southern stories. Instead of going to psychiatrists, we just tell stories. You know, we're all about stories in the South. That's how we speak. I've got a really cute little book for women dealing with breast cancer called What Tatas Teach Us. And you know that little slang term, tatas. And so my sister had breast cancer, and I wrote a book in her memory, and she actually survived that. And then I have another book called Bury Me With My Pearls, and it's dedicated to my mother because she was hilarious, and I talk about pearls, and it's more Southern humor. But the last book is The Rhinestones on My Flip-Flops, and people, once they read it, they love it, and I'm thrilled they love it because it's a self-help Southern humor book. And then the Sweet Tea Secrets is another one.
Now, you also do, you're a motivator. You go around and you also do motivational speaking. I can see how you could be successful at that because you're just wads of fun.
Well, I appreciate that. But, you know, as we all know, the convention industry has gone kaput on us. So I'm doing virtual presentations of comedy. I have a friend that is videotaping me doing my humor and my singing and my parodies and stuff like that. And we're having a great time. I've got some people that are interested. So I'm going to, you know, had a flip-flop. Really, Peter, flip-flop. Mm. Here we go. You got to live them out. If you're going to talk about it, you better live it. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you were a former Miss America contestant. So I got to ask, what was your talent?
Singing. You want me to sing?
Because you're a very funny lady. So What did you sing?
Once upon a time, the world had moonlight in his eyes. I didn't sing that. Another girl did, but I always wanted to. But that's when, you know, I did The Party's Over. It's an old Judy Holliday. And then I did Isn't It Rich? Are We a Pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. That's Sending the Clowns.
Sending the Clowns, yes.
Yes.
Little.
So, yeah, I love to sing. So I'm all about singing. I have a big band CD. My mom and daddy, I just teased on big band. I love. And then country, not the new country about somebody shot your dog and your wife and your jeans are too tight. You know that. Mm. I like the old crazy and Stand By Your Man and stuff like that. I love the classics.
Now, I understand in addition to your books and your speaking engagements, people can actually hear you on Sirius XM.
Yes, please listen to me. That's awesome. I'm so thankful. That's a God moment right there. Yeah, I have a lot of comedy on Sirius, and it's really funny. It's Southern humor. I think it's funny, but people enjoy it, and I get, you know, hit on all the time, and people on Facebook say, hey, I just heard your bit on Sirius, and I'm thinking, yay, keep playing to me. That's a good thing.
Now, again, with the theme of your book, Rhinestones and My Flip-Flops, and the idea of you know, basically making lemonade out of lemons, basically, I'm just curious to know, how has your life been affected both by the coronavirus that we are all having to live through and some of the social unrest that's currently taking place in the United States that is closely tied to the South?
It breaks my heart. It absolutely did. And really, I was raised on a farm down in the low country of South Carolina on John's Island. And question A is the convention industry is taking a massive hit. So here we are sitting at home trying to be creative. That's why I was so excited when I got your phone call. And the unrest is so crazy to me, because where I grew up, there is such a loving community on John's Island, and that's my family. I have no more brothers and sisters, and my parents were gone. And I love the community of the John's Island folks that really, they worked with my dad. I can't even say four. And I just have such a love. And I go down there, and I'm so embraced, and I embrace. And it, because, you know, Charleston had the terrible shooting 5 years ago is called the Emmanuel AME Church.
Right.
And you know what was so cool, Peter? Those people, if you haven't seen the movie, I think it's on Amazon Prime, watch Emmanuel. It will bring you to tears. But you know what it is people love each other and forgive. And that is huge. And I've had to have my share of forgiveness and for darker times that I've written about in my Pearls book. But that is one of the most beautiful healing productions I've ever seen. So to answer your question, it crushes me, because I can't stand it. I can't stand when people don't love each other, regardless of who they are, from whence they come. It really breaks my heart. I think we're better than that.
You sound like someone who's always had a positive outlook on life, no matter what life threw you. Is that something that is inherent with you, or is that something that came from your parents, or what?
I think it came from my upbringing, but I had to dig too. You know, if we don't have the best life all we've ever had, you can make a determination to say, you know what, my best life and my best self for tomorrow begins today. So it's just like a diet. Say, I'm going to start that tomorrow. No, start it now, right now. So I've always had a mindset. And I think if you want to be successful in life, and you know this, Peter, you have to take a lot of no's. Know this, know that. I get no's all the time. And I look at that word no, and I think the best four-letter word in the English language, and it's next. I can do next. And then when I talk, one of my key bullets, I talk about don't throw tomatoes at my field of dreams. And the very last bullet is to know, you have to know how to shine and be inside out and shine. Like I had to shine tomatoes. I had to know how to get rid of the ones that weren't great tomatoes. And when I talk about that, and it's the Cull principle, I talk about learning to do the hokey pokey. Because I saw that bumper sticker, what if the hokey pokey is what it's all about? And it is. Life is one giant hokey pokey, because it says you put your right foot in. Now I'm telling you, if you do the right thing and you can learn to what? Shake it off. That's the very next thing. Shake it off. Turn it around, see from a different perspective, learn a lesson, move on. And to me, that's what life is about, is doing the hokey pokey every day.
What are the titles of your books again? Because I love the titles, all of them.
Oh, Bare Feet to High Heels is about my journey to Miss America, where I'd make fun of pageants. That's really a funny one. What Tatas Teach Us. They're on my website, too. If you go to you go to funnyjane.com, it'll take you straight there. And Amazon, too, it's got them, like I said. The third book is called Bury Me With My Pearls. It's when I lost my sweet mama, and she was hilarious. And then the last one that I had published is called Rhinestones on My Flip-Flops. And the next one is going to be Sweet Tea Secrets from the Deep Fried South.
Jane, you are a breath of fresh air. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, you're a sweetie. I loved it.
Jane Jenkins Herlong, author of Rhinestones on My Flip-Flops. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0567, and you'll find links to Jane's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the CEO of Blueberry, plus we'll meet Gary Phillips, the author of Matthew Henson and the Ice Temple of Harlem. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. You can find buttons to Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio right on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review on their site of the show, because it would be greatly appreciated. Let's get back to the stuff. A man probably figured he was safe to do some mischief during police brutality protests in Chicago by wearing a full-face Joker clown mask. In a video, the man could be seen approaching a police cruiser with a lit object, opening the cap on the SUV's gas tank, and then sitting back while the car erupted in flames. The video also clearly shows something else, a distinctive tattoo on the man's neck below the mask. Investigators tracked down 31-year-old Timothy O'Donnell, whose tattoo reading pretty matched the photos, and a search of his home turned up an identical mask. O'Donnell allegedly admitted to the crime and was arrested on arson charges. He faces 5 to 20 years in prison. So, the joke's on him. I guess he can wipe that smile off his face. Oh, wait. It's a mask. You know, in prison, he can finally have that pretty tattoo finished by adding the word stupid, thus making the complete short sentence he so richly deserves. And in another story that is eerily similar, a woman probably figured she was safe to do some mischief during police brutality protests in Philadelphia by wearing a COVID mask. In a series of photographs, the woman could be seen approaching a police cruiser with a lit object, setting it on fire, and then setting a second cruiser on fire. The photos posted on Instagram also clearly show something else, a distinct T-shirt and a peace sign tattoo. With a quick Google search, FBI agents tracked down the shirt to an Etsy shop where it had a review from a Philly-based buyer who signed as Alley Cat Lore. With more Google searches, they found Lore Elizabeth on another clothing shop, and a search for Lore Elizabeth Philadelphia brought up a LinkedIn profile of a massage therapist, complete with a video showing the therapist has a peace sign tattoo in the same spot. 33-year-old Lore Elizabeth Blumenthal was arrested and charged with arson. The olden days, FBI solves crimes with footwork. Today, FBI solves crimes with Google. Ain't technology grand? Yeah. 39-year-old Koichi Ishii of Tokyo admits his passion is sometimes more like a curse. He is compelled to document every lost glove he sees on the streets of his city. He photographs and records details about each one, whether they're stuck in drains or washed up on the beach, but never touches or removes them. Over 15 years, he's curated more than 5,000 stray gloves, including children's mittens, heavy workmen's gloves, and lacy ladies' accessories. I live with the constant fear that there might be a glove right around the corner, Ishii said. He even gets off buses before his stop if he sees a glove on the ground. For him, the attraction is thinking about how the glove got there and who once wore it. Lone gloves are a constantly changing dynamic phenomena, Ishii said. Wow. Could you imagine how nuts he'd go if he started tracking lone socks on the road? I mean, they seem to be everywhere, and frankly, I think their story is far more mysterious. As a matter of fact, I wrote a story about a lone sock a while back. You can find it on my blog. It's part of my photo follies. The title of it is The Lonely Sock, and there's a link to the story on this week's website page and also on the Stuff File Facebook fan page. Check it out. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Chris Hedstrom of Odessa, Florida, filed a lawsuit against her neighbor, Heather Daner. That was late in May, demanding a paternity test for the 5 goats she purchased from Daner or a full refund. Hedstrom bought the 5 Norwegian dwarf goats, that would be Bella, Gigi, Rosie, Zelda, and Margot, in December, paying $900 and expected to register them with the American Dairy Goat Association. Registered goats have higher value than non-registered goats. But the ADGA denied Hedstrom's application because Daner is not a member of the organization, and Daner now accuses Hedstrom of trespassing on her farm and harassing her with calls to the police. She's been a nightmare of a neighbor, Daner says. Daner plans to represent herself in court in July. Yeah, when all is said and done, someone's going to be crying over spilt milk. I'm assuming the goats won't be testifying in court because, you know, they're always butting in. Sorry, just kidding. Yeah, I know. They were bad. Let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Todd Cochran is a pioneer in podcasting. He's the CEO of Blueberry Podcasting, and he's also the founder of Geek News Central and host of the Geek News Central podcast. Todd had the foresight to be one of the very first podcasters way back in 2004, and he joins us via Skype from Michigan. Hi, Todd.
Hey. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being on the program with us. And full disclosure, I have used Blueberry for years. It's one of the ways I get stats for this show. And you've got a great product that you put out there. So I want to thank you for that indeed. Now, going back to, as I said, being one of the first podcasters in 2004, what did you see as you, you know, headed that Conestoga wagon west? What did you see that so many people did not at that point?
Well, you know, it was really luck. I was... had suffered an injury while I was in the Navy and was still in the Navy and was out in Waco, Texas, and spent a lot of time in my hotel room. And I heard about this thing called podcasting from the Daily Source Code with Adam Curry and Dave Weiner. And I was a blogger and I wasn't a very successful one. And I knew I liked to talk. So it just started on a whim. I had no idea where this thing was going to go, but very, very quickly, the show just skyrocketed and it just changed everything.
And how did you go about picking a format or topic? What was the first thing you talked about on your podcast?
Well, as I said, as a blogger, I was writing about tech. So really that was the genre. And that's the show, that primary show I do today with 1,450 some episodes is my primary show, Geek News Central. Of course, I do other shows as well. But so I just started talking about tech. I wasn't a great writer, but I was a great talker.
Now, one of the things about podcasting today is almost like websites were when they first started in the 90s, and that is Companies got websites because they felt they needed a website, but they weren't quite sure what they needed a website for. There has been an explosion in the last little while of podcasts, not only from the general population who want podcasts, but at one point, corporations got on the bandwagon and started doing podcasts. So from your perspective and from what you do as a living, do you find that there are a lot of people who are out there who are doing this but are not quite sure why they're doing this?
Well, I think there's a lot of individuals that are in indies that are doing it for fun. They want to get their voice out, especially in the world that we live in today. People want to be able to express themselves and not worry about being taken down. At the same time, censored, I guess. And at the same time, the companies out there, they're having to find innovative ways to talk about their products and services because people are not going out as much or haven't been in the past 14 or 15 weeks because of COVID. So I think this is why we've seen a massive explosion in the last really 90 days. But overall, I think people that are getting to the space now really want to be able to have a message. And it's hard. It's just an easy medium to get into, and I think that's part of it.
I think you partially answered the question I was just about to ask, and that is, what do you think this current situation we're in with COVID and the lockdown, how that will change podcasting, if at all?
Well, it hasn't from a business standpoint. We're as busy as we've ever been. We're seeing a year's worth of new business come in the door every 30 days right now, which is crazy. But from a content standpoint, it really, really excites me because what you have now is people thinking beyond radio, beyond television advertising, they've done YouTube. They're thinking about how do they connect with their audiences. But it even goes further in that you have groups now that may not be being covered by mainstream media that have the ability to get their message out there. And again, I really think a lot of it has to do, we see if you're on Facebook, you're seeing a lot of content being shadow banned or banned. And I think people are starting to realize this. So they're starting to do their own shows on their own .coms, building their own messaging, building their own communities, their tribes. It's really, really exciting at this point.
Now, I've been in broadcasting for about 40 years, and even when I first got in, talking to the old-timers then about all the things that was going to wipe out radio. I mean, from movies to television to whatever. Is podcasting the thing that does it?
You know, radio's a multi-billion dollar industry. They're not going away anytime soon, but they've definitely had a rough run here. Because their advertising dried up. I mean, it just completely, it's starting to come back. But, you know, for 3 months, they haven't had no advertising. So I think it's made them realize maybe they need a plan B. Now, a lot of companies were already doing a plan B. iHeart, you look what they're doing, embracing podcasting in a big way. And Westwood and those other types of groups, ESPN, of course, have been in the podcasting space a long time. But I think what you really are going to start to see here is the radio stations are going to have to start considering podcasting as a medium that they're going to need to embrace more, largely because if you've got kids like I do, 30 to 17, what are they listening to? They're not listening to radio. They're listening to other stuff. So I think this is a good wake-up call. I laugh because 3 or 4 years ago, I'd be at a radio conference and the podcasting session would come on and everyone would go to the bar and drink and there would be 10 people left for the session. Now, at radio events, when a podcasting session comes on, it's a full house. So the attitude has definitely changed.
Well, touching on what you just mentioned with the ESPNs and the iHeart radios of the world, you have these big companies, these big broadcasting companies who are going into the podcasting sphere. Is this a similar situation to when, you know, a Walmart comes into a small community and it obliterates the mom and pop shops? Is this a concern for those who are the individuals who are into podcasting? When the big guns come in?
Yeah, I think here's the thing about podcasting. It's open. It's an open RSS. No one can basically become a gatekeeper. But what we're starting to see is big companies like Spotify and others are starting to figure out the advertising model for this. And they're going to essentially cut out the indies. You're going to have advertising placed around content now without the indies getting a cut. So the independent podcasters are going to have to work really, really hard to make sure that they're able to continue to monetize their show within their shows so that those that are advertising around the shows don't affect them. But, I mean, a podcaster is excited about this new distribution, but I always tell people, be careful what you wish for, because over time, this could turn against you. And it could work against you from a content standpoint. But again, with the space being as large as it is and open, that's the key here. As long as we keep it an open space where no one can be gatekeepers and you have to request permission to do a show, podcasting will continue to thrive.
I said in the introduction that you are also the CEO of Blueberry. You're more than just a podcaster. That's how you started. But tell us what Blueberry is, for those who don't know, and how this came to be, how this grew out of what you started doing in the first place.
Yeah, Blueberry Podcasting is a full-service podcast hosting company. We have a plugin called PowerPress for folks that use WordPress to make their WordPress site podcast ready. Basically, you can publish on your own site. We also have publishing on our platform. We provide our customers free websites if they need it. Really a full service provider, including private internal podcasting, ad injection. We really have everything a podcaster would need to build, monetize, and grow a show. The company really started as an advertising agency. I was doing advertising deals in 2005. And the advertising agency said, hey, do you know anyone else that wants to run advertising? I thought, yes, there's a business here. I did a call out on my personal show and built my company from fans of my show. And that really kind of kickstarted the company. So we've been in business since 2005. And we service around 80,000 podcasters in various means. Some just use our stats. Some use our hosting. Some use our plugin. So we have a variety of touch points. But you can pretty much say that about 80,000 podcasts are powered by Blueberry Tech.
Wow. Now, I mentioned earlier Conestoga Wagons, the pioneer idea. I'll use another pioneer anthology. It's like the gold rush. It seems to be that you got to the Klondike area long before anyone else did. And now everyone else is trying to go to that Klondike and panning for gold themselves. But the people who really made a big living in the gold rush were not those who were trying to pan for gold, but those who were trying to sell the pans and those, you know, and people like Levi Strauss who sold the wear that people wore when they went panning. So, sure. What do you say to new podcasters out there? And are you today's version of Levi Strauss?
Well, from a company perspective, you know, we were early, but we didn't get in the service space for, 5 or 6 years. Far as the podcasting space goes and creating content, no. It's if you have compelling, strong content, there's a full opportunity for you to build your brand, build a big show, build a big audience. There's really only about 300,000 active podcasters right now out of the 1.25 million that is in the Apple Podcast Directory. So you don't have to worry. Plenty of growth space here in the space. Just got to have strong, compelling content.
And besides the strong, compelling content, there's the old saying that advertising or not advertising is like winking at a girl in the dark. Only you know you're doing it. So what do you say to somebody who says, I've got the great content, now what?
I really, truly believe in the model of building your brand on your own .com. Don't build your castle on rented land. You want to have something that you own, you can control, and you control the message. Do the things you need to do to find, have Google find you and be indexed. And really, it's a lot of work. It's just not recording content. You got to go out there and do the groundwork with your website and social media and all the other 10 or 12 different ways to get your show seen and noticed, which is a lot of that I have available. If someone wants to send me an email, I can provide links. But I think there's plenty of opportunity out here.
And for those who want to know more information about Blueberry, obviously you have a website. Where do you want me to send them?
Sure. They can go over to blueberry.com. If you want a free 30-day trial, just use the promo code founder. That'll get you a 30-day free trial of our service. And of course, you can reach me, Todd@blueberry.com, BLUBRRY.com.
Yes, I want to make sure there's no E in there. That's BLUBRRY.com. Todd, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you.
Todd Cochran, the CEO of Blueberry. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0567, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet the author of Matthew Henson and the Ice Temple of Harlem. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, but I've got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you. Here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Well, we started off the show with a frivolous lawsuit, so let's bookend the program with what can clearly be seen as another. A California sex addict claims it's game over for his penis because of scantily clad gamers on the video game streaming site Twitch. The man is suing Twitch for $25 million, saying gorgeous gamers have caused him to injure his penis. Eric Estevillo filed a lawsuit in Santa Clara County Court on June 15th, alleging the popular site subjected him to overly suggestive and sexual content from various female streamers. Estevillo claimed he had to use a fleshlight to masturbate while watching the females, which caused him to chafe his penis every day. He says this was extremely painful and caused him redness and mild infections that forced him to use Neosporin on his tip to prevent necrosis, according to the 56-page document. Estevillo also alleges in the transcript he once ejaculated onto his computer monitor, which caused a short circuit and resulted in a fire that temporarily caused his apartment to go dark. Twitch, an Amazon subsidiary, told the New York Post the allegations were, quote, frivolous and have absolutely no merit, unquote. Estevillo says in the documents he has many ailments, including depression, agoraphobia, Crohn's disease, and OCD, plus sex addiction, which force him to be online all day. He claims Twitch made things worse because twisted programming and netcode made it nearly impossible for him to use the service without being exposed to such sexual suggestive content. Of course, he could have just not gone on the platform. Estevillo reportedly follows 786 female gamers and no male counterparts. Surprise. He names many of the females in his lawsuit. He asks for a permanent ban on all listed streamers and the millions in punitive damages. The least shocking part of all of this, he has reportedly filed many unsuccessful lawsuits in the past. So, basically, unlike when he's sitting in front of his computer, the evidence never stands up in court. Anyway. Let's get to our next guest, our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Gary Phillips is the author of Matthew Henson and the Ice Temple of Harlem. It's a reimagined pulp novel that follows the adventures of the first black man to reach the North Pole. Gary joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. It was just last week on this program that we had Chantal Amy Osman on the program. She was the one who pitched the idea of me having you on the show. And I had her on the show because I thought the idea of the imprint, that their new imprint for Agora Books was an interesting one, and I said that I would also get to you. So let's talk about your book and how you came up with this idea of taking a historical character and putting it in a pulp novel.
Right. Putting it in a pulp context, yeah, I think as we do down here in the States, man, we like to reinvent our figures from history and rip them large, be they Hamilton, Wild Bill Hickok, or Annie Oakley, or what have you, or for that matter, I guess President Eisenhower, who was a general in World War II. So, with that in mind, I thought somehow or another reason I stumbled on, or I knew about Matthew Henson for years, but really understood that in the real life, in real world, he had been kind of given short shrift because he was black, because of racism at the time, in terms of his accomplishment of helping to reach the North Pole. And some say actually that he might be had been the first man to reach even before Perry reached the pole itself, though, they were on the same expedition. So thinking about that and then thinking about using him in a different kind of context, and having been a fan of the old pulp stuff, Doc Savage, the Shadow books and what have you, and having a hand in, I guess, what is now called the new pulp movement, I just eventually figured out that, well, what I want to do is take that Matthew Henson guy and give him kind of the same past that he had, because he actually had a very interesting past. At 12, he was a cabin boy, and he did set sail, and he did see part of the world, and certainly a young black kid from Baltimore in those days would not have seen. And kind of then put him now in the context of the book in 1928. So it's before the Great Depression, before the crash of 29. But it's also, it's a tail end of the Roaring Twenties, but it's also the Harlem Renaissance period, which is a kind of fervent movement of both politics and intellect and art, as well as I suppose a few other things that came together in that time period in Harlem and New York City, and put him in motion in that world.
What opportunities do you have when you reimagine someone for a pulp novel, but you're reimagining someone who actually existed? What liberties do you get to take?
Well, I think, Peter, as I mentioned, I think because maybe in America we take a lot of liberties anyway, but I think because he is a public figure, not a lot is known about him. And I read there's a kind of memoir that he published in 1912 called A Negro at the North Pole, which recounts his time with Perry, because this was the eighth time they tried to reach the pole that they finally made it. But he doesn't really go in the book is not, I purposely will say that the book is not a biography, because he doesn't go into his past that much. And so I had to search around, and I found another great book about him by a kind of Hensonologist, this man, S. Allen Counter, who was a hard science professor at Harvard. But he was big on Henson, and he's the one who uncovered, not uncovered, but I guess it was a kind of known secret, but Henson didn't write about it in his book. Henson didn't have any children by his two wives, or two ex-wives, but he did have an Inuit son, and so that was unknown to me. That was certainly not in the official record, and the fact that he and Perry, and this is the great part that lend itself to the pulp aspect, they did in fact bring back fragments of this gigantic iron meteorite from that area of the North, or that area of Greenland, into the North Pole, because when they were in the village, they saw that the Inuits had iron tools, but there's no iron to be mined in that part of Greenland, and so they couldn't figure out, well, where is that coming from? And Henson, who did speak a couple of the Inuit tongues, asked his buddies, and they told him about, and they told him and showed them this massive iron meteorite that had crash landed there about 10,000 years ago. And they brought fragments, huge fragments of that back to New York City, which they sold to the Natural History Museum, but then to help fund then further expedition. So I guess the answer is there was already some rich material there that existed, and then as I said, sort of putting it in the mix, and so obviously taking certain liberties, obviously with the character of Henson. I actually de-aged him, in fact, because we're in 28. He was already not a young man then. So I shaved off a couple of decades off his life, and then put in the mix a couple of gangsters: Dutch Schultz, Queenie St. Clair, who themselves were real figures of history and have been reimagined as well in various movies. And even Nikola Tesla shows up as well.
Well, Matthew Henson lived a long time. He actually lived until the mid 50s. So
that's right.
You mentioned he didn't have any children with his two wives, but were you able in any way, shape, or form to be in contact with anybody who was related to him?
I've been told from a friend of mine that the actress Taraji P. Henson is a grand niece of his, and through this friend, we hope to at least get her to her publicist something about the book. But other than that, no, I am not. Nor I should be very clear. Nor did I make many efforts to do that kind of outreach. You know, as the great line goes in the movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, you know, this is the West, Mr. Stoddard. When the legend and the truth collide, print the legend. So I was I was interested in trying to craft the legend as opposed to necessarily being bogged down by too many facts, too much of history.
It is a pulp novel, I guess, in the guise or genre of something similar to, say, an Indiana Jones. Having said that, Indiana Jones is also a movie. So, would you like to see this turned into either a long-form drama on cable or a feature film?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I've had a few forays, little forays, I suppose, into Hollywood. I've had over the years, I've had some of my books, a couple of short stories, actually a couple of, and a graphic novel option. And I've done a little TV work living here in LA. I mean, everybody's in Hollywood, baby. So the idea that a Matthew Henson, a Matthew Henson miniseries really appeals to me. So yes, that would be a lovely occurrence if such should happen.
You have a great voice. Please tell me you're doing the audio version of your book.
I hope to, Peter. I haven't had any offers yet, but I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind trying my hand at it. I've done a little bit of voiceover stuff, a little bit of narration, but never full blown. Yeah, but this is it's a family voice. This is my father's voice, and my son, my grown son, his voice is deeper than mine.
Wow, boy, you give Melvin of the Temptations a run for his money.
Now you're dating me and you, because only the old timers will remember Melvin.
Exactly. The book is called Matthew Henson and the Ice Temple of Harlem. I thank you very, very much, Gary, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks for having me, Peter. I greatly appreciate it.
Gary Phillips, author of Matthew Henson and the Ice Temple of Harlem. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0567, and you'll find links to Gary's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And boys and girls, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff file presents the Idiot of the Day.
At 1:28 a.m. on June 20th, Airport Air Traffic Control in New Smyrna Beach, Florida, contacted police about a distress call coming from an aircraft. Officers already at the airport tried to locate a car they believed to have been stolen from Daytona Beach, and they found 22-year-old Robert Steinstra of DeBary, Florida, sitting in the airplane on the airport apron. Steinstra asked an officer whether he knew how to fly a plane, then explained that he had recently purchased the aircraft, valued at $1 million, for $20,000 and needed to fly to California to take marijuana to meet his girlfriend. Along with the bag of weed, Steinstra had in his possession a glass pipe with remnants of methamphetamine and other drug paraphernalia. New Smyrna Beach police charged Steinstra with grand theft over $100,000. He was also wanted by Daytona Beach police on charges of grand theft of a motor vehicle. Now, why, oh why, would you ask airport authorities and a police officer how to fly a plane when you're sitting in said plane, which you stole, and you have drugs on you? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0567. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0567. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were listening to this at the same time as watching The Wizard of Oz and listening to Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon, well, it's a waste of electricity. There are some things you just can't multitask.